You're listening to Rosie on the House.
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
It's the first Saturday of the month, so we're talking farm fresh, and June is National Dairy Month, so we've brought in Julie Murphy with the Arizona Farm Bureau to talk about the dairy's portion of Arizona's agricultural wheel, which represents about $23 billion to the state, and dairy is hand-in-hand with beef at the top of the wheel consistently.
Yes, and right now, dairy happens to be at the top. I had it wrong there a while ago. That rotates. And of course, Kevin looks at me and says, I can hardly believe that because our milk prices are so low for the dairy farmer. But dairy right now holds it, according to the USDA or the United States Department of Ag, the top leaderboard for our ag commodities here in the state of Arizona.
Which blows my mind when you get to the end of this hour and really process the amount of effort it goes into a 4-gallon jug of milk. It should be like $12. I'm sure Kevin Danzeisen agrees.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't need to be that high, but we always have something to complain about, I guess.
We have Kevin Danzeisen of Danzeisen Dairy. If you've not seen the wonderful glass milk bottles that are back in the shelves, that's you have his family dairy to thank for that. I've got so many questions, but let's just start with that. I don't know what it was, but the first time I saw milk back in a glass jar, I'm like, why did that ever go away?
Yeah, that's a good question. We wanted to bring it back to Arizona. Had it been here for 20 or 30 years, and it's caught on pretty good.
It has. Now, where do you get these?
The bottles?
Mm-hmm.
The bottles are actually made in Chicago, and they get shipped over here, but... as you know, they're refillable. So we wash them and refill them over and over and over again.
And as a consumer buying a Danzeisen glass jar, I just bring it back to the grocery store when I'm done, or do I have to bring it back down to the dairy for recycling?
You can bring it back to the store, and every store has the capability of doing it right at the checkout. So you don't have to go to customer service or anything. But anywhere our milk is sold, you can bring the bottles back.
And you guys do have a good return with the bottles. The fun thing that I like to say, though, is that there's a lot missing on the return because a lot of our families are taking them and turning them into part of their decor,
yeah.
Especially if they have this country swag going on in their house.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, there's probably quite a few in people's garages out there, too. But
I'm pretty sure our 1-quart eggnog from Christmas has a couple flowers in it over the top of the cabinets.
Exactly. I know I've got my Danzeisen bottles there, so.
All right. Now, this is just one dairy, though. You represent one of how many dairies in Arizona?
We're just under 100, and those are all family-owned. They might be incorporated, but we're hover around that 80 to 90 to 100 commercial dairies here in the state of Arizona that are family-owned.
And how many cows will I find at a dairy?
So this is a fun story I'll tell real fast. They range from maybe one of our smallest dairies is just under 1,000 all the way up to 10 to 14,000 head in it. So we have large dairies, but and compared to the Midwest, even our smallest dairy is pretty large because in the Midwest, the dairies are quite a bit smaller.
Any idea why?
Kevin, I think you should answer that question.
Well, my grandpa came here, and he never really started small, right? I mean, compared to what the Midwest was like, those dairies started way back, sometimes even in the 30s, 20s, 30s, and 40s, where we're kind of more modern here. Those people moved here and started with 500 or 600 and just grew from there. So I think that's one of the biggest things. And just to be out west in general, not just in Arizona, but as people move this way, you know, we just got more efficient. We can make milk for quite a bit cheaper with more cows.
And we got lots of flat land.
Yeah.
We do. And Kevin, you said something too, just because of the heat, how efficient our dairy farmers have had to become.
Yeah.
Expound on that a little bit.
Well, I've always said this, and I don't want to say it just because I'm one of them, but I think the Arizona dairy farmer here in Arizona, we're lucky because I know most of them, and to be honest with you, they're one of the smartest group of farmers you can dairy farmers as a group you can be, because we have this heat to manage, and it's a lot of management. You got to be really, really. It's, we're using technology more and more to cool these cows, and you just have to be on your management game to keep to stay in business and keep it going, because the fluctuations are so much. So I maintain that still as long as I'm still part of it, I guess. But there's a lot better dairy farmers out there than me.
And most of those 100 dairy farms, Maricopa, Pinal, pretty much down in the flats. You don't see a lot up in the mountains or high country.
No, a lot of that has to do with feed. You know, we feed a lot of alfalfa hay here. And that, we're lucky to have some the best alfalfa hay grown in the world right here. And so once you get further up, it's kind of hard to truck.
Your transportation costs start to rise. There was one outside of Congress at the base of Yarnell Hill that I think last time I drove that last couple times, it seems like that place is shut down.
Yeah, it's been shut down for a while. 2009 was a really rough time for the dairy industry, and he shut down in that time period.
Mm. That's a big vacant lot still just sitting there.
Yeah, he has the same issue. It's just hard to get feed all the way up in there because there's no farm ground.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Why you see miles and miles of ag and then a big old feedlot dairy farm right in the middle.
Yeah.
What else other than alfalfa are you feeding your herd?
Well, here in Arizona, we feed a lot of corn silage. You'll see corn being grown right now. That gets harvested here in the beginning of July. But we also feed, we're using, our farm specifically uses a lot of sorghum silage. BMR is brown midridge is a big thing here. It uses a little bit less water and it's higher digestible for the cow. And then we mix, a cow needs a balanced diet. It's really important to have the right amount of protein, the right amount of energy, the right amount of fiber. Every time a cow takes a bite of feed, you want it to be the exact same. They love consistency. That's what they want. And so what we do is we take that hay and that sorghum or corn silage, some sort of silage, and we mix grains and we mix it in these big mixers, and we make sure it's nice and consistent. And we feed them in front of the cows two or three times a day. So there's all kinds of we have about 13 ingredients in our ration right now that gets mixed in.
And you told me you feed them for health.
Yeah, we talk about that. That's the most important thing. So our cows right now average about 10 gallons per cow per day, and that seems like a lot. And people will be like, "Oh my goodness, that's so much milk." Well, the average. The reason that is because we feed the cow for health, and the milk production that comes is a result of health. So the healthier the cow is, the more milk they give. So what we're trying to do is we're learning more about nutrition every single day, and we know exactly what a cow needs when at certain times in her life period. And because of that, we're getting them healthier and healthier, and the milk production comes next.
And when you're talking about 10 did you say 10 gallons a day or 10 pounds a day?
10 gallons
a day. How long will a good cow keep that rate going?
Well, so in a perfect world, a cow will have a calf every year. And so, she'll have 5 to 7 calves. And so this is
in her life.
In her life. And so she'll be 7 to 9 years old or something like that, or 5 to 7 years old by the time it's all said and done. So in a perfect world, a cow will have a calf. The cow that had a calf today will have a calf the same day next year. And what we do is, as soon as she has a calf, we milk her for 305 days, and then we give her a resting period from 306 days to 365 days. So that's what we want. That's what we're striving for in a perfect world. Now, every cow's different. They don't get pregnant on time and all that, but that's what we're striving for.
So in that perfect situation, you said you milk for 305 days out of the year, and that's at 10 gallons on average per day. So you're over 3,000 gallons per year, and you'll how many years?
Five. So why would we say, 15 to 18,000 gallons each cow?
So wow. Kevin, I told you that Romy was gonna ask you some figures here, and those are fun figures to learn about.
And what's gallon per milk right now? Price per gallon?
Well, we get paid on 100 weight. It's about right now. It's around $14 per hundredweight, and there's 11.52 gallons. And
it's going to take through the break to finish this. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out on 15,000 gallons, and what
in her
what
life.
What does that income equate to?
Well, I mean, it's hard.
The mathematician here.
Yeah, I'm you've it's, got to.
It's hard to say because milk prices fluctuate like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
like that's the name of the game. But what part you're not thinking about there is how much it costs to feed those girls every single day too, and that fluctuates like crazy too. So, you know, hay prices go up and hay prices go down, and so it's not always a money making proposition, let me tell you.
Well, I believe it. We do our own beef raising, and I'm every time I've done it, I know where we could get it cheaper at the store.
Yeah,
not a whole lot. But at the end of the day, when it all comes through and you're done with your feed and your harvesting and your meat hanging and your butchering and packaging and storing and
shrink,
all that. But it's fun and we enjoy it and it tastes good.
Yeah,
I'm not quite the mathematician my son is, and I'm proudly displaying a Dan Zeeson milk mustache right now. This is really good milk.
Well, and you said
now,
this is
how
coffee?
Long ago. How long ago was this in the cow's udder?
That's a funny way of saying it. But yeah. Well,
from udder to mouth.
And you know what?
From udder to utterly delightful experience.
Well, that is a question. What's the process from being milked to the to your table? But we'll have to jump into that right after this.
If you see my milk cow, please. Driving on home. Cause I ain't had no milk and butter since that cow been gone.
That is a topic I do want to talk. We will cover later. So we're getting 10 gallons of milk per day. How much of that stays as milk? What ends up as butter? What ends up as cheese? What ends up as fill in the blank, all these great dairy products that when you go down your refrigerated aisle at the grocery store, you have to choose from. But one of the questions we did have, and Dad had brought it up as we were running short on time there, cow to table, how does it get there? What does it mean to be pasteurized? How do we go whole milk, 1%, 2%, which I've tried before and I just cannot. That's not even
you like whole milk,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
The real thing.
When you're raised on whole milk, it's hard to go back.
Oh. And car dairy, I was having a conversation.
Kerr dairy?
Mm-hmm. Bill's the dad?
Yes.
Bill Kerr, he was saying, and this was at the annual Farm Bureau convention in Mesa last year, that it's actually a myth. If you want to go on a diet, drink whole milk because the fat content in the milk will make your brain think you're fuller and you'll eat less food. And the milk, the fat in milk compared to fat that you would have in sausages and everything else that you could pile on your omelet is a fraction of that. So you drink the whole milk and you fill up faster, so you eat less food. So it's a better diet plan to drink whole milk.
It sure tastes better.
Now that's coming from a dairy farmer.
Exactly. And I'll let Kevin answer most of the questions you asked, but one little thing I always like to point out is 97% of our milk that we get in the grocery store, the gallon of milk that I bought, I may not be getting the Dan Zeisen label, but most of the time I am. But if I don't get the label, if I just pick up a regular gallon of milk in the grocery store, 97% of that is coming from our local dairy. So all of our milk, the fluid, they call it fluid milk in the industry, is local. So you can be assured that you're getting local. And that's one thing I like to stress a lot because we so celebrate local today with our agriculture.
Yeah.
And I do love that. You know, there's things like we just can't help avocados. We're not going to come local.
Right.
But that we can do that and that Arizona does do that for milk is, like you said, it's great that 97% local.
Yeah. And
where's that 3% creeping in? Get that out.
Well, I mean, a lot of the organic milk, obviously there's Shamrock Organic that's local, but a lot of the organic milk on the shelf is not local. It's from far away. Yeah.
And local is more important. So right. Answer so one of his questions.
From the cow.
Yeah, from the cow.
So, I mean, we can get it to the store shelf with it earlier than 48 hours, I mean, sometimes as quick as 24 hours. So when you get it, come into our creamery at 4:30 in the morning, there's milk in the tank from cows that were milked 2, 3, 4, you know, that night. We start a milking shift at 10 at night, and that milk comes into the creamery. And there's times that that milk is in the store 4:30 the next morning, and sometimes earlier than that. So,
What does it go through between your creamery and the shelf?
What does it go through between?
Like pasteurized. What exactly does
so
that mean?
The process. Okay. Yeah. So, like in our creamery, first of all, ours is a little bit different because we're smaller. We found all of our equipment. We say we do it the old-fashioned way. It's from all of our equipment's from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So we have all kinds of older equipment. But most milk is
so you're doing this by hand.
well,
you're
the cool
milking
thing,
by hand.
The cool thing is that we have all that equipment from 30s, 40s, and 50s. But I can log in my phone and turn stuff on and off. So we have automation. So that's kind of cool. So what we do is basically you separate, pasteurize, homogenize, and bottle. Separation is how we take the cream away from the skim. So we'll go through a separator and we spin it, and the cream will come in one tank, and the skim will go into another tank. And how we do it, this is the old-fashioned way. If we have skim in one tank and cream in another tank, we can make 1% milk by putting 1% milk back into the skim. Now I have 1% milk. 2%, same thing. And then our whole milk is just we have to standardize it at 3.25. That's 3.25% fat. So that's how we standardize it. From there, we take it and we run it through a pasteurizer. And I always tell people, you know, there's a big misconception about pasteurized milk, but all it is we heat it up to 161 degrees for 15 seconds and bring it right back down. So if people don't know, like on the dairy, once a milk comes out of a cow at 101.5 degrees. And so we get it down to 38 degrees within seconds on the farm. And the big key for our operation is to keep that milk cold all the way through the process, besides that 15 seconds of pasteurization. So all we do is bring it up and we bring it right back down. And then from there,
what is that accomplishing?
Well, why do we pasteurize?
When we pasteurize, what that does is it'll kill anything bad that's in the milk. Bad bugs can't survive heat. That's their kryptonite. It's not chemicals. It's not anything. It's just heat. They can't survive in a high temperature.
Okay.
And the higher you go, the longer the shelf life. So there's some, longer shelf life stuff out there. They just pasteurize at a higher temperature. That's all it is. So, from there we bottle it cold too. So we like I said, we like to keep the milk cold all the way through the process. That means on the trucks and all the way to your house. So one you like numbers. cool stat and thing that you to know about milk is 40 degrees is kind of our magic number. So if milk ever gets above 40 degrees, especially after it's pasteurized, so if it gets to 41 degrees, that's one day off its shelf life. If it gets to 42 degrees, it's two days off its shelf life. So it's really important to keep it cold when you get it at the store. On your way home, don't stop at the banks.
I don't want to interrupt the song. This sounds like something to tickle my funny bone, but we better get back to content here. We're joined by Julie Murphy with the Arizona Farm Bureau and Kevin Dansizen of the Dansizen Dairy. We're right in the middle of a conversation. We've got it pasteurized. Next is the homogenizing step. And if you've got a question or a comment, you can call in at 1-888-767-4348 or text to 411-923. What does it mean, Kevin, to homogenize milk?
Homogenize is you put the milk under pressure so that the cream won't rise to the top. That's all it is. We put it under, I think it's, I shouldn't even say a number, but We put under pressure. Well, people always say they want their cream to rise to the top until it actually happens. You know, and we'll do a non-homogenized melt for people, and they're like, "Hey, what's the stuff on the top of my bottle?" Well, that's the cream, you know. So we homogenize it for the, yeah. So that keeps that melt consistent. First of all, when we first started, I wasn't going to homogenize milk. I thought, you know, I'm going to do it just like we did on the farm. And what happened was I bought a non-homogenized milk that was in the store already, and I had a bowl of Raisin Bran, and I poured it on my Raisin Bran. A big chunk went out, and I'm like, oh, we're not going to do that to our customers. So that's how that came about. So that's all homogenization is.
Romy, because it's been so fun hearing Kevin and their family story, just know that if anybody does a search, literally just putting in dairy on azfb.org, up will pop all the profiles over the years that we've done on our Arizona dairy farmers, and their stories are fascinating. You're meeting the family. You get to know how much they care about their own family and their animals, and it's really encouraging and neat to read these Arizona farm family stories.
And that goes not only to just the dairy farmers, but every rancher that we've had in here. I mean, this is a generational industry for the state. We were going to bring Eric Rovey in, but he's off flying airplanes in Alaska for the summer. His dad's busy. He can't come in because he was busy milking, get this, sheep, because he's got a big production of sheep cheese that they're working on at the Dairyman's Co-op. So he couldn't make it in. But if I remember right, they are over 120-year in the West Valley farm family.
Just the Roveys. Yeah. And that's a very typical story. We have so many generational farm families just in this state alone that we could spend the next 20 years trying to cover them all, and we still wouldn't get every story told. And that's what's special about Arizona agriculture, is because we have these generation farms, and that's sustainability. And we have some depth, true domain knowledge, as I like to say a lot of times, about our agriculture. And the best person you need to be talking to if you want to hop into agriculture is the Dan Zeisen families about dairy, or the Kerrs, or the Roveys. If you want to learn about cattle ranching, you should talk to the Small Houses or some of my other ranch families. So it's really neat to know this depth of knowledge is coming out of our Arizona agriculture environment.
And I've got a question here from a texter. What is this I just drank, this coffee? This is very good.
It's our cold brew coffee. It's just three ingredients, cold brew coffee, our milk, and sugar. Yeah, it's...
Well, I will...
It's very good. I'm sipping on it, too.
And I'm going to take that. I'm going to pick up some chocolate milk, because my youngest one has suddenly discovered chocolate milk, but... I was watching her make it the other day, and she would take a glass of milk, and then she would take just like the chocolate you would put over ice cream, like Hershey's. I'm like, oh, I'm bringing you some Dan Zeisen milk home to show you what real chocolate milk's supposed to taste like.
Yeah, once I go glass, I never go back. That's what we always say. So,
well, this texter wants to know, what other flavors do y'all have, and are you coming out with anything new? Because there are a variety of different products. Milk products that y'all make.
Yeah, so we have the whole all the way to skim, 0% fat. We do chocolate and strawberry. Strawberry is starting to become a lot more popular. And then we do the coffee that we talked about. But we also do some crazy flavors. We do a root beer. It tastes like a root beer float. That's starting to become a lot more popular. Then we do an orange, too. We call it Arizona orange. Tastes like a creamsicle. We actually... are going to launch juices this month in June. We're going to, I know it's National Dairy Month, and we're going to start juice, but there's a juicery here in Tempe, and they just squeeze oranges, and we're going to bring in trucks and have orange juice, and we're doing a lemonade and a strawberry lemonade. The lemonades are kind of cool. It's just straight lemon juice, and then we actually take Sedona water, and we're mixing it with the lemonade. And
above or below Slide Rock?
I don't know. I just know it's from Sedona.
What the fun thing that too is, when we posted yesterday that you were going to be on the show on our Friends of Arizona Farm Bureau Facebook page, the entire conversation was about your flavors and what each customer's favorite flavor was.
Yeah. And everybody has a different preference.
A different favorite. Yeah. One of the ones that posted was his favorite was root beer. So
we also do milkshakes at the Chase Field with the Diamondbacks. So we do make an ice cream mix specifically for them.
And Christmas time, you'll make eggnog?
Yes, eggnog. That's a real popular one. This year, we're going to come out with a new flavor. We're going to have a peppermint eggnog also, along with our traditional eggnog. So we're working on a pumpkin spice, too, but we just haven't had that perfected yet. But the peppermint eggnog is really good.
And I love eggnog, and I've enjoyed your eggnog flavor now for what? I think you've done it for at least 2 years. Maybe one.
3 years.
Three years from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I would put in a vote for whole buttermilk. I don't know why I can't buy whole buttermilk in Arizona. I fly to New Orleans, and I got two things on my mind. A dozen raw oysters and a quart of whole buttermilk.
Not together, I hope.
I have the buttermilk first.
Okay. All right. I mean, there's got to be some Dixie beer involved in there.
Oh, man. If I would post my recipe, I have to make my own whole buttermilk on my kitchen counter shelf. And I promise you, Kevin, if I posted my buttermilk, Sunday morning buttermilk biscuit recipe, you could sell every ounce of whole buttermilk that you could make.
Well, let's work on it.
Let's do it.
You're not the only one requesting it, so we can. We're working on a bunch of stuff right now. I mean, we're on our fourth year, so like 3.5 years. I got to tell you, when we first started, we invested a bunch of our own money in this creamery, and we didn't have any stores that we were selling into. It was the dumbest business plan I've. I mean, it's so dumb if you think about it. Because the milk's coming off the line. We're like, well, now where are we going to sell it? Well, fast forward, we're in about 370 stores now.
That's awesome.
So if we can develop a whole buttermilk, we can get it out there real quick.
The end of my every day is a glass of whole buttermilk just at room temperature. That's how I celebrate the end of my day.
That's pretty good.
So we'll put out a poll on Facebook, and we'll say, who wants buttermilk? And then we'll look to the Dan Zizens to develop it.
There we go. Let's do it. That's what we're all about.
And in fact, you guys should post, anybody listening, let us know if you want buttermilk.
Or anything else.
Any other flavors. Because you guys are real serious on how you develop these flavors.
Yeah.
They're not random.
It's kind of an interesting story how the flavors. We kind of knew what we wanted to do, but it's a funny story. When we first got started, I was making it in my wife's kitchen. I had like some... the sugar and the flavoring, and I was trying to make different ones, and I finally get something that I liked, and I forgot what I put in. So I'd have the cocoa there and all that, and like, oh, now I forget how many ounces of this and this and that. So there's a really, really good ice cream shop in Levine called Scooptacular. His name's Nindy. And after cleaning up my mess in my kitchen, I went straight over to his ice cream shop. I go, Nindy, you got to help me, man. You have the best ice cream in the world. You got to help this poor dairy farmer trying to figure this out. So these are the flavors I want. And we worked real hand in hand with that little ice cream shop, and he helped us develop the flavors to a T. And it's been a really cool relationship ever since.
Do you have one flavor that is ending up being the most popular currently, or does it fluctuate?
Chocolate by far is our big one. And oh, I forgot to say, that coffee milk right now is actually going to be on sale in the Fry stores this month right now. So
okay,
I got to say things as I remember it, otherwise I forget.
I understand that. So we've got it now basically pressurized, homogenized. Goes to the store after that point.
Yeah, we'll store it in our coolers, and then as the orders come in, it goes straight out.
Who puts the expiration or sell-by date on there? Is that the dairy? Is that the grocery store?
No, we do it. We do tests. So ours is actually 24 days from the time it's bottled. A lot of times it'll last.
Is
as long
sell
as it stays,
by or expire?
That's expired date.
And, I mean, is it really expired? I've more than once, and morning comes along. You're in a hurry. You pick it up, and you're like, oh, that was 3 days ago. And you open the top, you're like, smells fine.
That's actually the most accurate test is the smell test, to be honest with you, because it's all about temperature. Again, if it gets above 40 degrees at any time, it's probably not going to be there. But if it stays below 40 and even like 38, you're going to get sometimes a week or 2 weeks past that date.
Okay. So it's put on by the... by the dairy, and it's for about 24 days after it's been homogenized.
That's what our tests show, yep.
And the smell test is a good test.
It's the best one.
All right, good.
And for the UDA co-op, they're the ones that put that on there too, correct?
On which one?
The sell-by date.
Yeah, every individual. So every individual handler or producer has their own date. It's not really mandated by the state. It's for us, we don't want anybody to open
have
up a bottle
experience.
Have a bad experience. So we're motivated to make sure. Yeah,
yeah,
we're really conservative.
Put a conservative date. And the only reason I mention UDA or the United Dairymen of Arizona is that's a co-op that's owned by our dairy farmers here in the state of Arizona. And even though you do your own bottling for your branded, you still supply a lot of your milk to the co-op, correct?
Yeah, the co-op's has been a great resource, and we're a great partner with UDA. So anything that we need, we bring into our facility, and then anything else gets sold through their channels. So they've been a great supporter, and most of the dairymen in Arizona are part of it.
Right.
And this co-op, are they the ones that then separate it, and they're who's making the cheese? Who's making the butter? Who's making the cottage cheese, the Philadelphia cream cheese? Is that all being done by, or do they separate it and they say, okay, we've got to this much milk over here for this quantity to fill that order for the cheese maker?
That the second is, so I consider, well, UDA, United Dairymen, has a powder plant. And so anything that doesn't come through those orders to the cheese makers and stuff goes to, our primary product at UDA is powder. Arizona cheese is over there too, but that's kind of a smaller deal. But the powder is a big thing. But they're just, I consider UDA a broker.
And so, UDA also does their own cheese curds.
Yes.
They do those. So you can get local cheese curds, and they actually sell them at their Milk and More store right there, like right in front of the plant, you know. So
Broadway and Hardy.
Yeah, Broadway and Hardy. So that,
but it's in Costco. I think those cheese curds are in Costco and some other spots. In fact, you can at our creamery store, Dan's Eisen Creamery store, we have those cheese curds. So,
how many gallons of milk does it take to make a pound of cheese?
I think it's 10 to 1. So 10 pounds of 10 pounds of milk will make 1 pound. Now it depends on the protein levels and stuff like that. Like Jersey's is a little bit more efficient than a Holstein cow because it's higher butter fat and protein content.
And what would they do with the whey, the leftover? Because that 10 gallons, you know, you add your, I cannot remember the name of what you add, but it makes the curds happen. And I mean, it's quick, and all that leftover, what's called the whey, and it's, some people say they drink it. It's disgusting. at least goat whey is. I've never made cow cheese, but the goat cheese we used to make, man, that is horrible.
I use a whey protein.
Once you take the curds out.
I use a whey protein. That's very popular today.
Yeah, there's all kinds of new products coming out with that whey. I mean, they're working on drying it. They make dry whey, powder whey, and that goes into like protein drinks and stuff like that. So I'm not real. That's not what we do. So
you're not the cheese side.
No.
You're the dairy, the milk, the cream.
Yeah.
Well, when we get back, we've got the final thing. What do you do with managing the other side of the cow? You have a lot you put in the front end of it for its nutrition, and there's a lot you get out of the middle and the udders. What happens to the end product that comes out the back?
Well, yeah.
I keep drinking malted milk, trying to drive my blues away.
I come for the music.
Gary does a good job with that.
Trying to drive my blues away.
Any malted milk in the future? How does that work?
That's a good question. Welcome to my loving. I don't know anything about that, to be honest with you.
Now, what was it? April, we had Hickman's in talking about eggs. It was close to Easter, and one of the final points to the life cycle of the chicken farming and raising, you know, they produce a lot of chicken waste too, and they turn that into the farm's choice fertilizer. Is there a cow manure has a ton of potential for composting and becoming good growing soil? Do y'all just take tractors and push it out in big piles, or what happens to the other side of the production there?
Yeah, we at Dan's Eisen, we partner with some dairies down the road, and we compost it all. So my dad likes to say we're trying to make money out of one end or the other. So, but he's a teacher for 25 years, so he's got jokes like that coming up. You know, it's not just dad jokes anymore; it's teacher dad jokes. You know, so no, we bring it all into a spot here in town, and we compost it. A lot of it goes to Yuma for vegetable farming and stuff like that. So, it's a high source of nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. So, it's a real good supplement.
So, what's the process? How long does that take? Now, you're getting milk onto the shelf in 48 hours. Are you getting compost to the vegetable farmers that quick?
So, it takes about 90 days. That's our shortest one. And after it's stable, it can be stored for a lot longer than that. So we bring it in. We have to make sure we have the carbon and nitrogen carbon ratio right, and then we get that up to 130. I think it's 136 degrees for a certain amount of time, and we have thermometers in the rows, and we monitor and keep track of it, making sure that it's the right temperature. It can't get too hot, and it can't get too. But it has to be the right temperature to keep going, so it can't get too low either. So we add water, or we have these big turners that turn it and get it going again. It's a pretty cool process. The other thing it does is it reduces it by about 50%. So it's a good process. I always say, if you fly over Arizona and you fly into Sky Harbor and you look at the ground, and especially if you come from the Midwest is that dark, dark soil. You can just tell just by looking at the soil. It needs something that has some earth to it, you know, and that compost is a really good supplement for the soil here in the valley.
We actually don't have our level of organic matter in our Arizona soil, at least here in the valley, certainly, is so much less than what we see in the Midwest. And part of it is because the sun. We love the sun because we're planting and harvesting, you know, 365 days out of the year, 12 months a year here in Arizona. But the sun also brutalizes the organic matter in the soil. So compost, like what the Danzisons are doing and stuff, makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's a really cool product for overseeding your lawn. Like when you put the overseed on, a lot of people like to put steer manure or something on, but the compost manure is a little bit more stable, and the heat kills the weed seeds in it, so you're not going to get the weed seeds like you do sometimes. You know, it works really good.
And that's what we used to overseed our lawn last time. We stopped down by the dairy. Help me out here. You're off of...
We're like Southern and 59th Avenue. That's where the creamery's at.
And anyone can just walk into the creamery. Y'all do have refrigerated product right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're open 8 to 6 Monday through Friday and 8 to 4 on Saturday, and we're closed on Sunday.
And y'all do sell that manure there. And we used it to overseed last time. It was what was the y'all's product name on it? Just Danzisen.
Composted manure, yeah. That's all. Yeah, it's just the company that we formed together with is called Diversified Organics is the name of the company that the dairies down the road formed with us. So
it's organic.
Oh, it's organic. There ain't no doubt about that.
So organic as you can get.
Now, one final texture wants to know about banana flavored milk.
We get a lot of requests for that too.
Really?
Yeah. We've actually worked on it a little bit, but it's not to our liking yet.
And they want to know, do y'all have plans of ever making ice cream?
Yes, we are in the process. Well, we already make milkshakes for Chase Field. That's 100% Danzisen product, and coming soon.
Julie, how would somebody support the Farm Bureau?
Go to azfb.org and also fill your plate on our websites. But join us. If you're an associate member, you want to support farmers like Kevin and his family. It's $59 a year, so it's very economical.
And it comes with a lot of discount saving coupons?
Huge benefits. You can pay for that annual membership in one benefit purchase.